And item number 11. I have.
Problem here. There we go. Yeah, sorry for the technical difficulties. Roger Mollier. This is a Taylor Yard project, and just a little history, I guess, is necessary. This is an amendment to a plan that was approved by the board a couple of years ago. It has been stalled somewhat by a variety of circumstances. One, the economy, of course, and secondly, we needed to get approval from the CTC to use the land. This is always the case in our developments because most of the property that we purchased or that we use for development has been purchased with money from other sources, and the proceeds of those are sometimes pledged against that land. They are willing to give it up in most cases and let us do development, in fact, encourage it. But we always have to get permission to make sure that the development is appropriate and that they're happy with the way we're using the land and getting the money back. This project in general is part of a former a site that was in fact a rail yard, was purchased with Prop 108 money back in the early 90s. There is and let me show you where it is. It is located generally north of downtown, bounded by the Glendale Freeway in the upper left. That's what you see there, and the 5 Freeway in the lower right. This is an aerial of the site, and the site is adjacent to, above it, you can see a park and a soccer field. Down below is almost out of the picture on the left, lower left, is the rail maintenance yard for Metrolink. It's another.
Either one.
Yeah.
Where is it that we're proposing?
We'll see it. You'll see it graphically on the next site, right? There's the site on the left. There is the rail maintenance yard on the right, far right. Between the building site and the queuing area is about 3 football fields, close to 900 feet. Between the site and the rail maintenance yard is about a half a mile, so it's quite distant. And as you can see, all those thousands of houses there are much closer to the site. I know there was some concern about the distance from both rail and the rail yard. As you can see, it's quite removed. It's a half a mile away from the maintenance site, and it is much further away than all the houses that have been there for many years. Okay, this is what is proposed to be built there. In general, here's the program. The reason we're back here today is because we do need a bunch of technical amendments, and they are fairly numerous, but they are very technical, and maybe I'll give you quick highlights, if I may, and please feel free to jump in or ask questions at any point. In terms of rent, we are essentially, as in all our deals, even though this is a low-income project for the most part, we are getting 100% of land value. We are not allowed to actually, it would be a gift of public funds, to actually discount the land even though it is a affordable project. We encourage the affordability, but the affordability is really done principally by the developer with whatever help we can give him through tax credits and other things. So the rent that we will get from this will be a minimum of what it was appraised at fairly recently, which was 100% of fair market value at its highest and best use, about $17 million, or the value assessed in the new appraisal that will take place not later than April 1st of next year. Each part, as it's taken down, will be further assessed by adding the CPI increases to it because it will be done in phases. So essentially, you can look at it as though we're getting 100% of the land as though we're selling it, but we're not selling it. We keep title. This is pretty common to all of our developments. We always do them on leased land because we don't want to give up control of the land so that we know that we get the kind of development that we want, that it stays that way during the course of the time that we have it, and at the end of the day we get it back. And we're also concerned that it makes sure that the developer if and when they sell it to another developer or another operator, that we have veto rights on that to make sure that we're satisfied with the developer, because they are adjacent to our development, our rail and or subway facilities in most cases. So the changes are a number. Let me point out the highlight ones and hopefully not skip over any that you're interested in. Number one, there had been always an agreement that we needed to fund a part of the cleanup of the site because it was a former rail site. That's about $800,000. Our original intention, as in most cases, would be to take that out of rent as a deduction. Instead, because half of the, or part of the money would technically be due back to the CTC, and that would be an improper use of that money, what we're going to do is collect it as rent first and then use it to pay back. So although there's an adjustment in here to budget, there is really not an outlay. It's actually taken out of the rent that we're using. Secondly, technically CTC would be entitled to half the rent because they funded half the purchase. CTC staff has agreed, and they're bringing this month to their CTC meeting a motion to allow us to keep all of the funds that we will receive, as long as we use them for Prop 108 purposes, appropriate Prop 108 purposes, which is fairly broad. So we expect that we will be keeping all of the money, even though we only paid for half of the land. And again, that we'll be getting 100% of value. The other items on here are pretty much technical. I can go through them to the extent you'd like me to, or please feel free to ask questions. I leave it to you as how far you want me to go in this.
I would like to give the directors the opportunity to ask questions, if that's rather than
sure
all through it. If that's okay.
Certainly.
Before we do that, I'm going to take public input, and then we'll go to directors for any questions. First person is Jill Sauriel, to be followed by Daniel Falcon.
Good afternoon. Jill Sauriel, I'm representing Councilmember Reyes's office. I'm here to speak in support of the project. And I wanted to thank your board for raising some of the environmental justice questions. I think that they have been in our mind for a very long time, which is why we started a community visioning process in this area back in the 90s. And we really heard, not only on this parcel, but over 100 acres to the north of this property, from the community to really envision Taylor Yard as something that would provide jobs, provide housing, and provide open space. And today you have out there at the very north end the media center off San Fernando Road that provides those jobs. You have the new high school, which opened this year. You have 40 acres of park space that's jointly managed by state parks in the city. And so we're really looking forward to implementing this last piece, which includes the housing and the mixed use. We are in ongoing conversations with Metrolink and AQMD about the existing facility. It's been going on for quite some time because there are residences that are there. We've been trying to minimize the impacts, and I think the project is suitable for the location. Thank you.
Allison?
Yes, thank you. Daniel Falcone with McCormick Baron Salazar. Just ask that the committee support the item, and I understand some questions raised about environmental and being sensitive to that. We have been very sensitive to that in our process. The development has been adopted for LEED ND silver level certification for the community itself, and each building itself will also be LEED certified. We have been sensitive to the environment surrounding the LA River, the new park that's been built adjacent to us, and recognizing the distance that we are from the Metrolink and working with everybody to ensure it's safe. At potential risk, if we don't move forward on this, is $15 million in state money that's available to build infrastructure, along with $4 million in federal stimulus funds that are being made available to the first phase of the project. So we would ask for your support to move it forward. In terms of environmental clearance, we are working with DTSC to make sure everything is safe on the site. If there are any questions on that, we'd be able to answer those as well.
From the directors? Well, I have some comments and I have a motion. My concern is the proximity of the property to the yard. And I know there are other houses around just because they were built there at another time doesn't necessarily mean it's safe. We all recognize the need for affordable housing, but the proposed amendment to the Joint Development Agreement raises significant issues that I don't believe have been addressed. In the last 7 years, greater attention has been given to the placement of residential, senior, daycare, and other sensitive receptors in relation to freeway and industrial locations. For example, the issues confronting environmental concerns in and around the 710 freeway and the Hobart Yard has brought greater focus on the need to address such concerns. This agency, and we laud the agency for this, has made a commitment to preserving public health as evidenced with the adoption of MTA's green construction policy, keeping in mind this philosophical commitment. It should therefore be necessary that MTA pursue a project that is not in conflict with the agency's commitment to sustainable practices or allowing an anticipated potential incompatible land use to occur. The potential of locating a densely populated residential property relatively adjacent to historical diesel locomotive maintenance yards necessitates a greater environmental analysis than has been previously explored, up to and including a health risk assessment and an environment justice analysis. And I know these were done, again, on the Hobart yards. I therefore move to amend the proposed JDA amendment as follows: that the amendment be approved contingent upon the developer, MBS, performing and returning to this board for further review with a health risk assessment and an environmental justice analysis. And that is my motion. Do I have a second? Okay. Thank you. Any comments? Okay. If there are no objections, then is it that we adopt the recommendation of the staff with the amendment? Any objections? That's what we'll do. Next item, number 12. Thank you.
Good afternoon, directors. My name is Jenna Gulager. I'm a new face here. I'm a deputy executive officer in countywide planning. The recommendation before you is to approve $5 million to be awarded under the Transit-Oriented Development Grant Program. This is a new grant program that was approved in the FY 2011-12 budget, and the focus is to support and accelerate regulatory changes that promote transit-oriented development around three lines in this first round. Those are the Expo Light Rail Phase 1 and 2, the Crenshaw Corridor Line, and the Gold Line Extension. With these criteria, 10 cities were eligible in the first round, and they were given a 24-month timeline to complete the work. Just gotta get lower. We received 6 applications from 5 cities, and we were oversubscribed by only $689,000. From our $5 million budget. We had a 5-person panel review, and we recommended funding for all of the cities. However, we did recommend some reductions in the proposed amounts, and we are working with those 3 cities to reduce their budgets accordingly.
Comments? First, let me go to public here. Damian Goodman?
Good afternoon, board members. When the proposed amendments to the Crenshaw Specific Plan first came to the Design Review Board almost a year ago, it was stakeholders in the Park Mesa Heights community that complained that the height restrictions were not high enough. It was Hyde Park stakeholders who sued to stop a Fresh and Easy because the site plan had a small single-story building with a football-sized parking lot fronting Crenshaw Boulevard instead of a multi-story mixed-use plan. Crenshaw Boulevard is not the hopeless ghetto so many on this board envision. We in the Crenshaw Corridor see a Crenshaw Boulevard that competes with the prized business districts of your suburbs, a revitalized Crenshaw Corridor built through progressive economic business structures with an appropriate blend of mixed-use housing and office space, complemented with first-rate ground-floor retail services that so many in our community currently travel out of to receive. It is this vision, often the product of bureaucratic opposition and political indifference, that is under attack with your street-level Park Mesa Heights plan. And it is why we request and hope that you will continue, as we begin these processes, to reevaluate your street-level plan in the context of the future of Crenshaw Boulevard. Thank you.
Input. I do have a suggestion to staff that as you work on the additional $1 million that we've ask you to plan for, that you contact the COGS and work through them to get to the cities. I think you'll find it more efficient. And I'd be interested in knowing what kind of a timeline we think we will have on that additional $1 million. I don't need it today, but it would be good if you'd kind of give us a heads up and let us know whether it's going to be a year or 10 years.
We're hoping to bring the guidelines, assuming there'll be some revisions to the guidelines since we're including Metrolink in this, by February. We're hoping to bring that to the board.
Okay, great. Thank you. Move to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Any objections? So ordered. Next item on the agenda, number 13, receive and file report on regional rail update.
Good afternoon. Let me pull up the PowerPoint. Excuse me one moment, please. Don Sepulveda, Executive Officer, LA Metro. And I want to take a few moments and talk to you about regional rail matters, combine it with a couple of other items in here, and that is our quarterly Metrolink issues and also an update on AVL, the AVL study where we're at. So, and high-speed rail, we're actually working on more of the solutions for our area. We have a myriad of solutions for high-speed rail in the Southern California region as they start moving into our area. But probably more important is that fourth bullet point, and we've been personally meeting with members of the California High-Speed Rail Board in developing certain aspects of their business plan to encourage development, advanced development in our corridors here in Los Angeles. And I wanted to mention briefly on the business plan, they did release their business plan on November 1st. It does take a more conservative approach to ridership numbers and financial numbers. It seems to be more realistic, I should say. It outlines a blended approach to constructing the system and phasing that actually includes our transit, the regional transit agencies, specifically regional connectivity. We now have an opportunity in the business plan to pursue advanced investment in our corridors that provide independent utility not just for the high-speed rail system but for our Metrolink service as well. This is a big benefit for us as we start moving forward. I mentioned costs have increased with the advanced engineering, as you all know. The estimates now are in year of expenditure before they were in the calendar year, and that makes the inflation is quite a big difference in this case. They have phased the project differently in accordance with their funding, their reasonable funding outlook, and of course I did mention the ridership numbers. The Grapevine study is still out there, and we're still holding this as a very critical item for us. As you know, the board has officially supported the Palmdale station. The team, the high-speed rail team, has been pursuing this Grapevine I-5 Grapevine alternative as an option instead of the Palmdale station. They have been back and forth with various findings on that, and we have found out recently that they approached the senior management of the High-Speed Rail Authority and proposed what they thought was the viable alternative, and the High-Speed Rail Authority came back and said, we want more answers. So they're having to dig further into the weeds on this to come up with more answers. They expect the report on feasibility to be in January. This is, as you know, also the board has supported officially requiring or requesting that they have their meeting down here in Southern California, specifically the Palmdale area, when they do unveil this. So with it not being unveiled until January, we see that happening in January versus December. Los Angeles corridor, it still is the busiest, second busiest in the nation. I'm not going to go over all these numbers. You can see them right there. The big thing is customer satisfaction index is at 87%. It's moving in the right direction. We believe it could be better. The Los Angeles board, as we all know, is moving forward with local governance of the system. This goes directly to that customer satisfaction index. And we are developing those guidelines. We are moving forward with some draft legislation as this goes forward. And we've got some hurdles to cross and some different issues on that. But that is moving forward. And we actually expect that business plan to come out later this year. And we've received a little bit of an update on rail-to-rail earlier. Rail-to-rail is a month. It basically, the system provides Amtrak riders with a monthly pass to actually ride the Amtrak service in a comparable service area. This agreement's up for renewal. As you may know, it expired on the 31st of October, but it's got an automatic 60-day extension. We have been in negotiations working with Metrolink to come up with alternatives and viable methods to move this very important service to us forward. We have definitely opposed a step-up plan. We don't think it's worthwhile for customer service. We think it actually hurts the overall system, and we think it hurts the convenience factor that this great service provides. So we'll be coming to you in the future with more reports on that. We have been asking for accurate passenger counts. Amtrak is providing information to us that we believe is based on incomplete information and incomplete determination. So we're really pushing for this. We actually proposed to them to move out their prime, their trains. They have three trains that are in prime commuter spots. We've asked them to move them out and move the Metrolink trains in those prime spots, and that actually answers a lot of the questions that Amtrak has. It actually allows these railroads to serve their market share. They have come back and said that's not acceptable to them because of revenue. So, like I said, stay tuned. Metrolink is moving forward with their Guardian fleet cars. They have 117 that they've received. We have authorized a loan of $18 million for them to actually exercise a 20-car option that should be actually worked through this year. And the positive train control, although it's gotten delayed a little bit due to technology issues, it's actually on track for the first quarter to second quarter of 2013, still well ahead of the federally mandated date of December of 2015. What's really important to us is one thing that we've been really pushing forward is coming up with a fleet management plan. Many of Metrolink's vehicles are aging. They're in need of some significant upgrades for cleaner burning and more efficiency. So they've released their fleet management plan that outlines a plan for this. We're still going back and forth on this and how this is going to go, but there's an opportunity for some very significant 75 to 85% funding of upgrading their locomotives to additional cleaner burning locomotives that we feel if they pursue this successfully, it's going to reduce our member agency cost for all of this. And the Antelope Valley line, as you know, we are moving in full court press on the Antelope Valley line, and they are doing a first sweep of the corridor, pulling down the low-hanging fruit, if you will. They're looking at critical areas in this initial sweep. Tier 1, they're actually going to look at simple realignments that can decrease some travel time. A little Freudian slip there. Looking at some operational issues that we have on the line, some very simple things that aren't going to cost a lot of money and yet are going to and avoid environmental issues. Tier 2 is actually going to look at minor impacts, any environmental issues that might pop up. And Tier 3 is a full-on, what do we do if we release all the animals and go forward with 110 miles an hour? And I expect to have some Tier 1 ideas at our next presentation. What is a new development since I've spoken to you last is we have been meeting with Bob Hope Airport. And Bob Hope Airport has is right in between the Ventura line and the Antelope Valley line, and actually could be served by both lines. Right now it's only served by the Ventura line. We are working with Bob Hope Airport and their ground access study to look at a possible station at Hollywood Way on the Antelope Valley line. This is actually going to be done in concert with the Antelope Valley line study, but in such a way that it will not delay the findings from the Antelope Valley line study as far as a prioritization and capacity and safety improvements on the Antelope Valley line, which is a very good thing. This actually can be dealt with as a placeholder for us. One of the important aspects on this is the complete partnership we're working with on Bob Hope Airport to move this thing forward. It can actually be, we've written into our scopes for both the modeling consultant and for Metrolink their scopes as an option to model this extra service. We received this, I'm going to cut it, get to the chase here real quick. I'm sorry. There's a lot to report here. The Braemar to Burnson double track project that you have authorized us last month, we're still working on the MOUs on this. We received this grant for $3 million to actually move forward with this. This project will be going forward shortly. That's where the project is at. And the Van Nuys station is related to that, and again, same report on that one as well. And in conclusion, we are continuing to coordinate and interface with Metrolink and Metro. We're trying to continue to build that partnership that we have. We're meeting with them regularly. We are also working with our other partner agencies in the corridor throughout the counties, and also working with the other member agencies along cross jurisdiction to come up with some very good programs. Rail to Rail moves forward, and of course, we're looking at other capital projects in Los Angeles. And that being said, I'm done.
Okay, and I have one question.
Yes,
ma'am. I'll see if anybody else has any questions. If this thing falls apart on the rail-to-rail, is the program going to disappear after December 31st? And if not, how are we going to make sure that it doesn't?
Amtrak is proposing that if we can't come to an agreement with them, they will incorporate their own surcharge to sell basically a surcharge ticket for people who want to use Amtrak as an option to rail to rail. This is essentially a step-up plan for rail to rail. It provides additional inconvenience to our Metrolink customers. We don't support that, and we feel that they cannot unilaterally do that. I actually believe that we're going to come to a conclusion on this. Even though we're as far apart as the two MBA sides, I believe we're actually going to come to a conclusion and work this one out. It's possible it could go to arbitration.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions? No objections. We'll receive and file. Item on the agenda, number 14.
Madam Chair, Directors, Frank Fine with the Highway Program. This is a receive and file status report on the park and ride transfer from state-owned park and rides. I just want to give you an update is that we're using the Artesia Transit Center as a model of how we would set up our transfer. We've been working with Caltrans to identify the process of how we would execute the transfer of the park and rides. We are using what we call a collateral facility relinquishment process, which will need to go to the California Transportation Commission. And I want to give you an update. This slide gives you an idea of what the normal process is. In negotiations with Caltrans, we've been able to shorten that period down from 9 months to 6 months, and we're still looking at opportunities to shrink that down. One of the things is the Artesia we identify in the table just below. It identifies all the permits, agreements that need to take place in order for the full transfer to take place. We are working with Caltrans to affect all that, and one of the things we want to identify were the items what we think has a little higher risk, so you're aware of it, but we're working to manage that risk and facilitate that and run that in parallel with the relinquishment process. Just an idea is the new owner permits And the consent to common use will be actually when Metro takes ownership will be need to be in place. As for the other one, we are continuing to work with County Council and Caltrans to address the transfer of the or the amendment of the consent decree on the park and rides along the 105 and on the 110 as well. We are also working with bus and rail operations as well as county sheriff. We are facilities maintenance staff is already reviewing the sites as well and compiling what is necessary to bring them up to stay good repair as well as managing the facility. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
Yes. Just, perhaps we could get an update in, at our January meeting of the timeline and status of these.
Yes, I'll be happy to.
Thank you.
And do we have a, is there a similar degree of risk associated with the I-105 park and ride stations?
The I-105 park and rides are tied to a consent decree. We will need to go to court to address that. That's why we're working with County Council, and County Council has retained outside counsel to assist Caltrans in preparing the necessary documents to go to court and have a hearing.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Receive and file. No objections. That's what we'll do. Receive and file. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda, number 15.
Madam Chair and Directors, my name is Lion Sardana Jadi, Executive Officer for Highway Program, and sitting right next to me is Robert Muchuka. He's our project manager for the High Desert Corridor Project. This item is a receive and file for the status report on High Desert Corridor Project. This is a project that is a brand new facility stretching from Route 14 in Los Angeles County, going all the way to at least Route Interstate 15 in San Bernardino County, totaling 63 miles in length. It's a greenfield development project. And recently, by the way, the Caltrans is the lead agency in terms of preparing the environmental document, and we're working in partnership with them very closely. Measure R had allocated $33 million to complete the environmental document. Recently, we have completed the alternative analysis study, and now currently the components that are being considered in the remaining alternatives include express lane, freeways, or toll road, green energy corridor, or additional accommodation for the high-speed feeder rail services within the right-of-way. Our schedule, we're on target to complete the environmental document by July of 2013, and would expect to issue the draft environmental document in the fall of this coming year, 2012. And the public hearing is expected to follow. As we mentioned, we expect to complete the, receive the ROD by July 2013. We have a pretty rigorous public outreach process. Recently, staff had worked cooperatively with Caltrans to complete a webinar, which outreach to the stakeholder agencies. And also tomorrow, we're going to have an all-hands agency team meeting in Llano. So there's going to be a pretty extensive, large participation that is expected. We are expecting to have another round of community outreach meetings in January 2012, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, this is a receive and file item.
I have one question.
Okay.
What's the population of Llano?
At this moment, I can know the number off my top of my head, but there is an active community out there. And that's why we're making sure that we do our extensive outreach out there and making sure that the community is involved. There is the Llano Community Association that's has welcomed us out there, and that's why we want to make sure we selected a one location that's combining both counties.
Right.
I drove to Llano once because I wanted to see what this place was, because it was the one place, Mike, that we got when we put the trauma tax on the ballot in 2002. It was the worst polling location. That the trauma tax got 42% of the vote. Everywhere else it got 73% on the average. And I wanted to just understand what Llano was all about. And so my wife and I drove out there one day, just take a nice ride through the Antelope Valley. And I didn't see anybody. I mean, I saw a couple of abandoned gas stations and some structures out up in the distance. So I guess that's where the folks were. But what's interesting about Llano is that it was originally, in, I think, 1912, it was formed as a socialist collective community. And then it kind of evolved from there. So I read there was an article about it somewhere.
So did you
have fun?
Was your drive successful, and did you figure out what it was all about?
Oh, no. It was peach season, and we saw a lot of peaches for sale, and that distracted us from our original purpose. And bought a lot of peaches home.
Okay, if there are no objections, we'll receive them file.
Just one clarification: with the project limits are from SR-14 passing I-15 and on to SR-18. In town of Apple Valley.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No objections. Receive and file. This concludes our business. CEO's report. I am so sorry. Somebody do the CEO's report.
She's sorry. Our CEO isn't sure whether he's in China or in California, so I'll speak for him. Ni hao.
An indoor hug.
The Van Nuys Rapidway staff and consultants conducted three workshops with communities in the valley. Over 160 people attended. Last week, the new San Fernando Valley COG kicked off its future with the first San Fernando Valley Mobility Summit. The current chair of the COG is Director Najarian, and Director Katz served as the event moderator, and Director Yaroslavsky was the keynote speaker. The event attracted over 300 participants. It was standing room only, and two members of Congress joined the group, and as did an assembly member and a lot of local elected officials. And Director Yaroslavsky, you want to mention anything about that? About
oh,
the
well,
Valley
you're,
Con?
You're doing great.
It's a good thing.
I'd rather talk about Llano.
Well, that's more entertaining for sure. And then the Crenshaw Leadership Council, which is our the group that's working with us on implementing the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor, hosted two Saturday morning open houses, one in L.A. and one in Inglewood, opportunity for the council to introduce opportunities to the community to have continued participation in support of the project related to economic development, safety, and opportunities, the kind of thing that Mr. Goodman talked about here this afternoon. That completes my report.
Thank you. Now tell me, am I done? Thank you very much.
Good job.
That's because you all cooperate so much.